This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Jim White from Cloudy Bay. How are you, Jim?
Oh, I'm great, thanks, Chris.
Excellent, excellent. Last week we did a little bit of a profile on you. You came from Clayton Mantell, you've been the Cloudy Bay viticulturist, you've been in charge of viticulture and winemaking, and now what's your role?
I'm the Technical and Sustainable Development Director, which doesn't really tell you what I do much at all. But
no.
I do all the things at Cloudy Bay that no one else wants to do these
days. Well, as part of the sustainability, one of the things we're going to talk about today, or the thing we're going to talk about today, is PB wines, because they can potentially be part of the sustainable future, particularly for New Zealand. Before we get into that, do you want to just explain to us what PB wines are? Most of the listeners should know. We've done a few episodes on PB in the past.
Yep, so PB, I won't try to butcher the German, but in essence, it means vines resistant to fungus. And so these are grape varieties that have been bred by plant breeders using natural crossbreeding techniques, with the intent of bringing genes that infer resistance to our two key fungal diseases, powdery mildew and downy mildew, into Vitis vinifera, into varieties that make high quality wines. And the genes themselves are coming from, it's like distant cousins. So that can be vine species that naturally grew in the US. So powdery mildew and downy mildew both were originally from the US and they were imported into Europe from the US. And so the genetic resistance has come through evolutionary resistance of vine species growing up with these pathogens in the US. And so through natural selection, genes have been sort of passed on through the generations. And so what plant breeders are doing is trying to capture those particular genes and crossbreed them in so they retain that winemaking flavour profile of Vitis vinifera, but just with the little sort of 1% or 2% of genes that are coming from the American vines that bring the resistance to the diseases.
The old American vines, what are they, Vitis robustus? Jess Robin described them as smelling and tasting a bit like a cheap, damp fur coat.
Yeah, foxy is the aroma often attributed to the varieties using those that have a large percentage of those. The genetics from those vines.
But they've been crossed now for hundreds of years, and my understanding is about 20 years ago they had a particular good year of crossing, and there's been quite a lot of new Piwi grape varieties, these hybrids, that are now got rid of all the foxiness, and we're just getting to the point where we're getting the genes that we want.
Yeah, that's right. The first range of these sort of Piwi, the old school Piwi varieties were from the 1890s and 1900s, and there was up to 400,000 hectares of these hybrid varieties in France planted up until the 1960s, but the wine quality wasn't very good. The Germans got really into plant breeding in the 1950s and 60s, and the Swiss, and then more recently the French and Italians have come to the party, and they really see this as a potential pathway for us to move away from having to spray our vines with protectant products, and for us to move to a far more sustainable viticulture future.
The disease in New Zealand, I think, is slightly different to the disease pressure in Europe.
We've got far more pressure, particularly here in Marlborough, with powdery mildew. We have very little issues with downy mildew here. Up on the North Island, a little bit different. Hawke's Bay and Gisborne and Auckland, they have far more downy mildew pressure. That just relates to the rainfall patterns during the growing season.
And how serious a problem is it for New Zealand? I know it's all over the world, but in particular in Marlborough here, how bad is it?
Well, we've really seen an increase. We've got, if you want to get quite nerdy, we've got the two different types of powdery mildew here, and they both producing or infecting vines from the asexual phase and the sexual phase. The sexual phase is quite concerning because it's bringing new genetics and has the potential to develop chemical resistance quite quickly. But we're really fighting powdery mildew on two fronts at the moment. If we go back 15 years here, we didn't have the sexual phase here and we only had the asexual phase. Disease control was much easier. But we saw through 2013 to 2017, we were starting to lose entire crops, particularly with Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, which are more susceptible to these pathogens. And then it started to impact Sauvignon as well.
Sauvignon Blanc's got quite a thick skin, isn't it? That's one of the things it gave to Cabernet Sauvignon, was a thick
skin. Yeah, it's just a little bit more resistant to powdery mildew than Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, which are very susceptible.
Why did you suddenly start seeing sexual reproduction and therefore some resistance?
We think it had been in New Zealand in other parts of the country. And I guess with the movement of grapevines from nurseries, it's likely that the sexual phase arrived here in Marlborough during planting of new vineyards from other parts of the country. So these pathogens will typically, they piggyback on a grapevine or on equipment or something moving between vineyards.
Is it a different pathogen that reproduces sexually, or is it a different phase in its life?
It's a different phase in its life cycle, and it's going through that full sexual phase, whereas the pathogen we had here didn't enter that sexual phase. And so it wasn't producing it's a little bit like mushrooms. So if you think about mushrooms through the forest, you know, if you think about a forest, there's mycelium all through the forest floor. And that's a bit like the asexual phase of powdery mildew. When it produces a mushroom, and that's the fruiting body, pops up out of the ground and releases spores. And during that process, you get a mix of genetics. So there, you know, there's breeding going on. That's what the sexual phase of powdery mildew does. It produces a little fruiting body on the cane of the grapevine. And that basically opens up and releases spores as well.
But why is it happening now as opposed to maybe 20 years ago?
We just didn't have that sexual phase here.
But why, if the plant was here in the first place, why didn't it?
When it arrived here, the old version or the asexual phase, it comes in with infected buds, not from a fruiting body. And so we only had that form of asexual, which has to reproduce on green tissue each year. So in an asexual phase, in springtime, we get what we call a flag shoot, which is a bud from the previous season has been infected by powdery mildew, and it grows a sort of distorted shoot that has mildew spores all over it in springtime, and that's what it was infecting the new growth through that year. With the sexual phase, you've actually got the fruiting bodies forming on the outside of the, so growing on the canes like little mushrooms, and then when you get the right conditions in springtime, they're then releasing spores as well. So what we've got is attack from both forms today.
I still don't understand why it's suddenly changed. Is it because the asexual, if it's produced asexually, you can only reproduce asexually?
Asexually, correct. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. Yeah.
So it wouldn't go into that sexual phase.
Okay. And then suddenly you had something.
The sexual phase arrived, and that has continued that sort of sexual phase of reproduction. Yep.
Okay. That makes sense. Europe's been leading the peewee market, if you like.
Within our parent company, Malt Hennessy, we had we've been talking about, I guess, plant material and quality plant material for a long time and improving plant material. And we had a conference in 2022 based at the Vivio Cooperative Rosciato in Italy, which is one of the leading, well, it's the world's largest vine nursery. And they have a plant breeding program, breeding peewee disease resistant varieties. And so there I was exposed to not, I guess, the old school types, of which, you know, Germany.
Regent, the Rondos.
The Bacchus, which are often, they're often bred in Northern Europe to survive very cold conditions, but had some disease resistance. The Italians were focusing on using the classic varieties, the important international varieties, and breeding resistance into them. And obviously from a market acceptance perspective, if we could have a variety that tastes like Sauvignon Blanc, looks like Sauvignon Blanc, but we only have to spray twice a year, that would have huge commercial potential for us. And so that's when I started to deep dive into it. I went back the following year during the harvest time and through the vineyards, looking at these new varieties, tasting, learning about the breeding process. That's when I came back and contacted Riversun Nursery, who I know are a very forward-thinking nursery, and said, and they knew nothing about peewees, but they're really interested in bringing in new clones and varieties. And so they got out there, went to Europe, signed agreements, and have now imported varieties. And so we have them in New Zealand, but they're currently in quarantine.
We'll drill into this quarantine process and what varieties came in later on. What really impressed you about the varieties in Italy? Because my experience with peewee has mainly been coming from Germany, because they're the ones that are being brought into the UK.
Yep.
So I'm not really familiar with what's going on in Italy in regards to peewee.
Yep.
So what really is going on there?
Yeah, look, I mean, they're focusing on important commercial varieties, particularly for northeast Italy. So Friuli, you know, Sauvignon Blanc is a key variety, Pinot Nero, Pinot Noir, a range of other Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot. So they're working with these international varieties, and then over multiple, it takes quite a long time to breed a new variety. But they're really focusing on bringing those genetics across into those varieties and ultimately making wines that taste really good. And for me, the key is going to, great, you can talk about all this potential in from a viticulture perspective, but what do these wines taste like? And, you know, going and tasting wines and then getting a whole range of these Piwi varieties and getting bottles of wine and bringing them back to New Zealand. And I held a tasting here at the Brigado Research Institute for a whole lot of sort of interested winemakers, because for me, viticulture, you can have all the great ideas, but the winemakers are the gatekeepers of this, because if they don't taste good, they're not going to have any commercial success. And so putting on a tasting of Piwi varieties where people suddenly, you know, you could see the eyebrows raise and say, well, these wines are actually really good. Always tasting a variety and then trying to understand how those varieties grown in this climate, in these soils here in Marlborough, will taste. You know, will they be much higher in acidity? And we think about that with Sauvignon, if you're tasting wine from Sancerre versus New Zealand. You know, Sauvignon tastes quite different. Trying to be able to sort of transfer the potential of these varieties, thinking about how they will taste grown here, that's when we sort of raised the interest of the industry. And that's when Riversun really got interested, because they could see the potential from a winemaking perspective as well.
Well, what are the varieties that you've brought in? How many were there?
Obviously, we've got 9 varieties in quarantine. There will be more coming. So obviously, with a Sauvignon dominant industry here, the varieties that have Sauvignon-esque characteristics from Italy, and much to the chagrin of the French, the Italians have added the first name of the parent variety to the varietal name. So varieties like Sauvignon Ritos and Sauvignon Nepis have Sauvignon Blanc as the key parent, key characteristic. From Germany, there's Sauvignon Gris, which again is a Sauvignon-like from Germany. There's Sauvignac, which has been bred by French, and that's coming in. Cabernet Blanc, which is an interesting variety. Valentin Blatter is a plant breeder, works around the world. He was actually based here in New Zealand in the 1980s. He actually bred Cabernet Blanc here in New Zealand. No one wanted it, so he took it back when he went back to Europe. So we've re-imported Cabernet Blanc. Floreal, which is a quite aromatic, almost muscaty variety that's been bred by the French. Voltus, which is the variety that's now been permitted in Champagne. Yep. And Sorelli, which is it's an aromatic white variety as well. So currently all whites, and the potential that we'd be looking at varieties like Pinot Course, which is based on Pinot Noir. But there's so much going on in the world of Piwi breeding at the moment that we'll just sort of pick and choose the best of what we see as in the future and bring them into New Zealand over time. But what we really need to do is get these out of quarantine, get them in the ground, and prove that they make striking aromatic wines here in New Zealand. That's where the industry interest is going to come from, and then ultimately where the consumer interest in these varieties will come from. They've got to make great wines.
So in Italy, or where you're pulling the Piwi grape varieties from, they've already proven that they've got the disease-resistant trait.
Absolutely.
And now you're looking to decide, do they make interesting wines in New Zealand in this climate as opposed to maybe in Friuli?
Correct. And will that disease resistance match the pathogen types that we have here? You know, that we talked about those two phases of powdery mildew. Will the powdery mildew resistance be resistant in the environment with the pathogens we have here?
And also, if you are getting sexual reproduction in your powdery mildew, how long does that disease resistance last?
Yeah. There's a whole lot of questions here. But understanding the genes is getting much better as they've mapped the genetic code of grapevines. They can rapidly test for a lot of these genes. We know which particular genes infer resistance. And then breeders are trying to do what they call stacking genes. So if we know that there's 3 or 4 genes that provide resistance for powdery mildew, breeders are trying to breed in 2 or maybe 3 of those. And it's a little bit like the Swiss cheese analogy, as you put multiple layers of Swiss cheese together and it looks like a solid piece of cheese. But when you have a single piece, it has holes in it. So breeders are trying to stack the genetic resistance in the variety so they've got the maximum level of resistance potential.
Yeah, okay. Because the last time I looked at Piwi, I was talking to some guys in Germany who are a German breeder. And one of the things I asked them was, well, when you plant it out, because we talked about how they go through the process of getting a Piwi variety, and I said, well, why don't you just do DNA testing? And he was like, oh, there's just so many plants that when you first plant out, you plant thousands of different vines, and then 1 or 2 of them might be the one that you want to propagate second.
Well, now they can rapidly screen them with DNA screening. I know you're going to go and see Daryl at the BRI, who's the leading New Zealand plant breeding. Mm-hmm. Daryl's got a oh, it's a fancy bit of kit that basically can run genetic analysis on any new varieties just after the seeds have germinated. And I guess that's that very early stage. If they don't have the resistant genes, they just get removed from the program at that very early stage. They don't even need to go to field plantings.
They are doing that screening now.
Yep, yep.
Let's talk about the quarantine process in New Zealand. I often joke with people that if you're flying into New Zealand, well, for God's sakes, don't bring an apple.
No.
Bring 20 kilos of crack cocaine if you want. They won't mind that, but don't bring an apple. You know, New Zealand quarantine is quite rigorous.
Yeah, so biosecurity is a key factor for New Zealand to keep out pests and diseases. Now, I think about for viticulture, as I obviously work a lot in that space, the likes of the brown marmorated stink bug, which has caused problems with getting infesting berries and getting into ferments and causing taints. And in Europe, you know, we have a very strong protocol to, if they find it, you know, to chase it down and eliminate it. And the same goes for any new plant diseases. And so any plant that are imported into New Zealand need to be imported into a government facility where they have to undergo a couple of growing seasons and rigorous testing for diseases and viruses. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is inadvertently bring in something that devastates an industry, be that beekeeping, apples, viticulture, or anything. So grapevines have to get imported as cuttings or as in little flasks as tissue-cultured plants. And they have to spend two growing seasons in a quarantine facility, which is managed by the government, where they regularly test for pathogens, for diseases, for viruses, and a whole range of other, you know, phytoplasmas and bacterias and things like that. And if they're deemed to be free of those, they then get released to the nursery who's imported them. So it's a very long and time-consuming process. For us, it takes, you know, about 2 years between first flying those plants into the facility and then getting, you know, one plant out into a nursery of that new variety. Then there's the process of multiplying those up so that we can graft them onto rootstock, then getting them out into vineyard, and then finally making some commercial wine. So when I came back in 2023 and convinced the Riversun guys that they should jump on board, and they jumped in, they got vines into quarantine, we don't think we'll make a wine of any significant volume out of any of these varieties for nearly 10 years after that first initial stage. So it's a long and drawn out process.
So what we're thinking, 2035?
Yeah, I'm thinking 2032, we should be able to have maybe, you know, getting a hectare of one of these varieties planted that we can, you know, have a proper go at making a wine of, rather than doing little micro vins and trials.
Once you get to a hectare, you'll have plenty of plant material to scale up very quickly.
Correct. Though. Yeah. That's the key, is to be able to scale those up. And we need to test them, because people in the industry here aren't going to jump in and just go and plant a hectare of an unknown variety. They've got to think about how they're going to sell it, what are they going to do with it, rather than just plant them willy-nilly, rather than find out you've got a problem later down the track. You should consider your problems and have solutions for them before you start.
Early on, I imagine a lot of it will be just blended into other wines.
Yep.
What's the legal limit, grape variety not being on the label?
15% in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So we have the potential to blend up to 15% in a Sauvignon Blanc, for instance, but it would need to be convincing from a wine quality perspective. That's the key. Irrespective. So I guess, you know, we think about why peewees are starting to take hold in Europe, because copper's causing massive problems with soil accumulation.
That's from copper sulfate.
That's from copper sulfate and copper hydroxide being applied to control downy mildew in Europe. And I think, you know, Bordeaux and parts of Italy have some of the highest copper concentrations, which is a toxic heavy metal, in their soils from viticulture controlling downy mildew. In Champagne with Voltus, the variety that they've allowed there, the idea is that they would plant that around the villages so that they could eliminate spraying in that sort of interaction between, you know, populated areas and viticultural areas. And for us in Marlborough, that might be the case here, potentially. We don't have that same landscape. We tend to have houses dotted throughout vineyards here. No one likes a sprayer operating near their house, so potentially we could plant these varieties around houses, would provide that buffer zone of very low applications, and really only having to apply twice over the flowering period as recommendations, just because it's the most critical time. I read plenty of literature of growers who don't spray their vines at all. And, you know, if we can get to that point, that would be fantastic. At the moment, the nurseries strongly recommend that you continue with two sprays. And that's to eliminate chances of pathogens evolving around the resistance, and then for us to lose the potential resistance of those varieties.
So you see these grapes initially as part of a blend to help manage spraying in certain areas.
I think that will be one. That will be one part. There'll be another part where wineries and growers will say, well, I can plant this and I can sell these as Piwi varieties. And we know that there's some markets like Japan where these are being, you know, rapidly adapted. There's a whole market, you know, so the sustainability piece is massive. So it's not just spraying. We think about the, you know, if we have to spray vineyards here 14 or 15 times a year, there's a huge carbon load that goes in burning diesel. The soil compaction and movement and driving tractors over soils that many times a year has a lot of other impacts. So I think once you take a sort of helicopter view of the sustainability potential of Piwi varieties and you say, well, if we can take all of that out, potentially we might not even have to have tractors and sprayers. We might be able to do that spraying twice a year with a drone. So there's no soil compaction, no burning diesel to put those sprays on. It really does has a massive paradigm shift into the viticultural system that we have today and that we've had for the last, you know, 150 years essentially, and really revolutionises grape growing for the future.
Do you think Cloudy Bay will go around and produce a Sauvignon course in the future, or do you think, because we were talking last week about how Cloudy Bay has quite a tight grape
range? Yep, with River Sun, I guess my interest, we've put a hand up to put the first experimental vineyard in to plant these new varieties in Marlborough. And first lot will be coming out of quarantine in the spring of 2026, and then we'll get the second tranche in the spring of 2027. We want to put them in the ground and just assess. I've proposed the idea and said, well, could we have Cloudy Bay Sauvignon? If we drop the name Blanc, and because it was a blend of 50% Sauvignon Nepis and 50% Sauvignon Blanc in the future, maybe. I would never say no. And if Sauvignon Nepis performs to such a high degree that the wine quality is fantastic, we'd really have to examine whether that was a route that we would take. I guess we need to prove the varieties first. I see a huge amount of potential in the likes of Voltus in something like Cloudy Bay Pelorus. So it's a wine with a name that's not relying on a varietal, a house wine of champagne, of any of the champagne houses, where the varieties can go in there. People don't really get that hung up about, is it Pinot Noir, is it Chardonnay, is it Pinot Meunier, is it, you know, any of the other sort of small champagne varieties. They care about what it tastes like and the name of the wine. And I think there's real potential for an entryway into wines with the likes of Pelorus at Cloudy Bay for a start.
And you've got your Tococo as well, so that it doesn't have the name on it.
Yeah, well, it's Tococo and it is Sauvignon Blanc, but it's, yeah, it does have Sauvignon label. But look, I guess it's a wait and see. We really need to test these varieties and test the quality potential of them, and then we can start to make some sort of crystal balling decisions about the future.
And so when will we see the first Sauvignon Nepis?
Well, the first wine we're hoping to make at a micro level, and they'll be made here by BRI. They've got a fantastic research winery here that can make 17 litre parcels of wine, just like we would make in a commercial facility. And we're hoping to have those first wines made in probably 29, and that'll give us an insight into what our terroir and these grape varieties can produce.
When you say 17 litres, I thought more ultra-small batches, because of thermal characteristics and all sorts of things, they don't always come out the same.
They've designed a winery here to make amazing commercial-style wine, so they can replicate what I can do in a 20,000-litre tank in 17 litres here.
Oh, okay.
And that was the reason that this facility was built, so that we could do a range of trials for industry. For instance, we run vineyard trials that might be irrigation trials or other things, and we actually send the grapes to BRI to make them in small parcels because they can make them so well, and you can actually, there's no impact of winemaking. What you're seeing in the results is actually the treatments that we've put into the vineyards, or trialing new yeasts, or trialing a range of different things that they do here.
Okay then, Jim, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Chris. Thank you. Thanks.